We're holding on Kufama Days about 10 lines. Kufama Days,
oh, yes.
Kufama Days about 10 or 12 lines from the bottom. Line begins, Shelzeh. We learned yesterday, the Gemara started like this. We learned in the Mishnah, we learned in the Mishnah about a case of a woman who was married or had been with one man and then with another, and she had a child. We don't know whether it's from the first or the second one. So we said, now the Mishnah had said that if both of them are Kohen, then the child's definitely a Kohen, and therefore he can work in the Beis Mikdash. We said he works in one or the other Mishnah, which we'll talk about soon, what that means exactly. On the other hand, we had a din of Shmuel from the Gemara that said that a child born from Znus, where you have a Kohen, had relations with a woman, and we don't know which Kohen it was, that we prevent him from acting as a Kohen. So we're trying to figure out how that fits with our Mishnah. So we wanted to argue that we had to figure out, when the Mishnah is talking about a case, again, where this woman had relations with one man, and on the face of it, the Mishnah had meant that she was married first to one and then to the other. The problem with that is, if it was that the first one died and then she married the second one, which fine, then the child was Kohen, but how do you have? The Mishnah talks about that both of them would have to be owning him for him. The first one is not going to be. He's dead long before the kid is born. On the other hand, if it was that she was divorced, then the kid's a cholo. The first child, either you look, however you look at it, either he's a kohen, but then he's a kohen, he's the son of the first husband, and therefore he can be metame to him, whereas the Mishnah said he can't, or he's a cholo, then he can be metame for whoever he wants. So we said, therefore, that we would have to say that the Mishnah is talking about, the Mishnah on the face of it is talking about a case of znus, where she was mizana outside of marriage with one man, and then she was mizana with another one, or the other possibility we discussed yesterday, the Mefarshim on the Marsha asked the question, Mefarshim on Shulchan Aruch talk about the issue whether the same thing would apply if it was nus with the first one and a marriage to the second one. Anyway, the Mishnah implies that the child can act as a kohen. So how is that according to Shmuel? That's where we're up to. Amar Rav Shmaya bin Ma'enes. So Rav Shmaya says, you can have a case, forget about Znus. The case of our Mishnah could be talking about, she was married to the first husband, and then she was Mimayim. We've learned a number of times before, and we're going to have more in the Perek after the next one, in the 13th Perek, or the Dinim of Miyun, that if a girl below the age of Bat Mitzvah, or technically below Shtei Sairus, whatever, was married off by anybody other than her father, the marriage is only in effect in the Drabbanan, therefore she can declare Miyun, I don't want to be married to him anymore, and that's that.
She's not declared a Grusha.
Right. Well, she's not declared a Grusha, right, exactly, so therefore she'd be able to marry another Kohen, and her first husband's still alive. But the problem with that is, the Gemara asked him, Enes Mita Yolda, how could a girl who's still young enough to do Miyun be able to give birth? We're talking about over here that she had a child, and we're not sure if it's from the first or the second. V'atoni Rabbibi kamed Rab Nachman, didn't Rabbibi teach a braisa in front of Rab Nachman? Shalosh, which happens in the first parak, Shalosh Nashim Mishamshes B'moich, there's three kinds of women who are allowed to have tashmish with, who are allowed to have relations with their husband using moich, using a wad of cotton or some other absorbent material or whatever. We talked about, by the way, Rashi and Tosfos argued, does this mean that she can put in the moich before they have relations in order to absorb the zera? Or are we talking about that she uses it afterwards to wipe? Whatever the case, a woman who's already pregnant, and a menika, a woman who's nursing. Why? Ktana shemetis abavatamus. The ktana is allowed to because she might become pregnant and die. It would be dangerous for her. So we see that a ktana, if she becomes pregnant, is going to die. Muberes shemetis also uber a sandal. A woman who's pregnant already, the problem is that her baby might end up being deformed. We talk about the idea that she might become pregnant again after she's pregnant with the first one. She may become pregnant with a second fetus, which is recorded in medical literature. And then the first one may be harmed. It'll get flattened out like a sandal. And menika shema tigmolus benava yamus, and a nursing woman is allowed to use moich to prevent becoming pregnant because she may have to end up weaning her child because her milk will change in consistency when she becomes pregnant, and then it'll be no good for the kid who's already nursing.
And how is the moch going to
Either it prevents conception according to Rashi or according to Tosfos. You use it afterwards to prevent conception by wiping out the zera.
For a second time, you're saying.
Yeah. The Ezu is Ktana, and what's the definition of a Ktana for this purpose? From 11 till 12. Pachas mikan oyaser akain. If less than that, if she's less than 11 or over 12, mishameshes kedarka vayelachas, then she can have normal relations. Divir a meir, because if she's less than 11, she's for sure not going to get pregnant, and if she's over 12, the pregnancy won't be dangerous to her. That's Rav Meir. No matter what, you always do tashmish the normal way. You don't use moich. Because you have an issue of hashchas of zera, you have a problem of wasting zera. We'll have rachmanos and prevent her from getting pregnant if it's no good for her. As it says, Hashem watches over the simple. So anyway, we see from this braisa that the whole point is, if she's less than 12, then pregnancy would be dangerous for her. It'll kill her. And the baby also won't survive. So what are you talking about over here, a case where the girl was below the age of miyun, and she's able to have a baby, and then we're saying she's still old, that she's still young enough to do miyun and to remarry? Can't be. Now, Mefarshim point,
but it would be dangerous.
So Mefarshim point out, actually, that when we had the sugya in the first parak, the Gemara had brought up the possibility that maybe it doesn't mean that necessarily pregnancy is going to kill her. But there's two things. Shemati Saber, number one, she might become pregnant. Not necessarily below 12 is she going to become pregnant, but she might. And number two, if she does, it might kill her, it might not. She might be able to survive the pregnancy. So Mefarshim point out, according to that explanation, our Gemara over here doesn't really fit. Because then yes, you could have a case. It's an odd case, but you could have a case where a girl was young enough to do miyun and still has a baby. So all of the Rishonim, the Ramban talks about this, the Rashba, the Ritva, etc. They all talk about, okay, the Gemara is talking over here according to the first understanding over there, the simple understanding, she cannot survive a pregnancy below 12. The Gemara in Sanhedrin talks about, talks about over there, for example, that boys in those days were able, in earlier days, were able to father children already at age 8, and girls were, Sheva, was able to have a child at 6 or 7, yeah. Maybe, it's very rare cases, but the Gemara mentions over there that Dota sort of showed them were different, that in the earlier generation, they were different. Anyway, so we're back to the question, how do you have a case? What's the case of our Mishnah? Unless it's a case of Znus, and if it's a case of Znus, then we're directly contradicting Shmuel. The answer is, Mashkachas lo b'kedushei tos. Yes, but you could have another possibility. The case of our Mishnah is where the Kedushin were based on a mistake. As we've been talking about many times already, you can have a case where the Kedushin was done al Tanai, and the Tanai never took place. And then she would be mutter to marry a second husband, who's a kohen, and it wouldn't be a problem. Like Rav Yehuda says in the name of Shmuel, the Amr of Yehuda Amr Shmuel, Mishum Rabbi Shmuel. The pasuk says that he loins pasa afsura. It says by a saita that if she was not forced into it, then she's also to her husband, which implies hanit pasa muteres. But if she was raped, she was mutter. But the yesh l'cha acheres. But then the pasuk is implying that there's another case. She loinit pasa muteres, even though it was not forcible, even though it wasn't raped, she's still mutter to somebody. She's still mutter even to a kohen. The Ezu, and what is that case? Zush Kedusha, Kedusha Tos. This would be a case where Kedusha Tos, where the Kedushin, where there was a mistake, there was a misunderstanding or whatever. Shafilu B'nam Murkav La'ak Sefer, even if it was not only Kedushin, even if they actually went through with the marriage. We don't say, now the concept sometimes of the Gemara says, that even if the Kedushin were al Tanai, maybe the Nisuin, we had a few times before, the Gemara had said, Kedushin, there can be a Tanai, Nisuin, there can't, because we might assume the Nisuin, that the person is doing Nisuin, like he's saying, forget about the Tanai. The Kedushin may have only been al Tanai, maybe they weren't valid, but the Nisuin, let's just go ahead with it and forget about the Tanai. We're saying over here that not. Rabbi Yehuda Amar Shmuel is saying that no. In this case, the Nisuin follow the Kedushin. If the Kedushin were based on a mistaken premise, then the Nisuin are too. So even if she already has a child, nevertheless, she can still do Miyun, or actually not really Miyun. She doesn't really need to do Miyun in this case. She's not Tana. But it means, in other words, that the marriage is annulled, and she can go without needing a get.
Considered Tana, even if she has...
No, she's considered a Tana. Here we're talking about a Gdola.
Right.
When we say Mema Enes, when we say Mema Enes, we mean, in other words, that the marriage is nullified retroactively.
Right, but no, regardless of the case, a katana who has a child, it can do miyun?
Well, the Gemara just got finished saying that on the face of it, it's impossible for that. If she's old enough to do miyun, if she's young enough to do miyun, then she's too young to be able to carry a baby.
One or the other.
Yeah. Now, again, the first parak had implied that not necessarily. You could have a case of a ketana who's able to carry a pregnancy to full term. But, again, the Gemara here is not going according to that. So anyway, so there you have the case of our Mishnah. Now, retroactively, yes, it comes out in effect that it was znus because it was kedushei tos, but we don't consider it znus for the purpose of Shmuel Din. So for the purpose of Shmuel Din, we will consider the child to be able to be a kosher kayin. Only in Shmuel's case where it was actual, because it was znus. Only Shmuel's case is where it was actual, deliberate znus. Remains it, basically, that's when we say Meshach Kenoisim Ikorna, that we prevent him from serving in the kayin. Then the Mishnah.
Rav wouldn't agree with that.
No, the Gemara didn't say Rav. It was just Shmuel. Shmuel had said this din. We didn't have any.
We don't have
any. Then the Mishnah said, "Hoyu shneim koyanim." Bechulu that if both of the prospective fathers were koyanim, then we said that we said a number of dinim. Actually, some of them don't necessarily only apply if they're koyanim. Some of them apply no matter what. One of them was we said that if he hits or curses one or the other of them, he's potter. Even though the Torah says a person who hits or curses his father or his mother is chayv misa. But here, since we don't know which one is his father, then he's potter. So Tanan Rabbanan, hika zeh b'chozeh v'hika zeh. What happens if he hits one and then he hits another one? Or the other one. So now for sure he's hit one of them who is his father. Or kilo zeh b'chozeh v'kilo zeh. Or he cursed one and then he cursed the other. Or hika shneim b'vasacha. Or he cursed both of them at the same time, or hit them both at the same time. Now, what do we mean by the same time when it comes to hitting, by the way? Here, Rashi says, it means, for example, that he took a big stick and hit them, so the blow landed on both of them at the same time. In various other places in Shas, where the sugya also comes up, Rashi has a couple of different explanations. One of them is that he hits one of them, and then he hits the other one, because remember, in order for him to be chayav misa, right, in order for them to be chayiv misa, there has to be asura. Edom have to warn him, if you do this, you're going to be chayiv misa. So what happens then in this case, one possible way to understand this would be they warn him, you know what, of those two people, one of them is your father. If you hit him, you're going to be chayiv misa. So he hits one and immediately, because today Edom hits the other one. That's another possibility, which Rashi mentioned elsewhere in Shas. A third possibility Rashi mentioned also elsewhere in Shas is he has two hands. He hits one with one hand and the other with the other hand. And before we discuss why Rashi needs three different possible scenarios, anyway. So chayev, then the Tanakhama says he'd be chayev because no matter what, however you look at it, he has hit or cursed his father. Rabbi Yehuda, I'm a b'vasachas chayev, b'zachas et potter. Rabbi Yehuda says no, only if he did it both at the same time, like our case over here with one stick, would he be chayev? But b'zachas et potter. But if he did it one after the other, he'd be potter. Because right now we're assuming because you needed two hasrais. We're assuming that when we said one after the other means outside of Tzedek HaDibur. The din with Asura is it has to be they warn him and he does the act immediately besides to the Dibur. He hits you after the Misa. He says, I hear what you're saying and I'm going to do it anyway. Whack. That's how it works. If it was after Tzedek HaDibur, he's not Chayav Misa. Because then he can use the excuse that, you know what, I forgot the Asura. I have short-term memory loss. No, but that's what we're saying. Bezach HaZeh. If it's Bezach HaZeh, if it's outside Tzedek HaDibur, If they warn him, you have two guys over there, Reuben and Shimon. One of them is your father. If you hit Reuben, you might be chayav misa. And he says, I accept that, whack. And then they tell him, if you hit Shimon, you might also be chayav misa. And he hits him as well. So then it's hasra safek. Each hasra was only based on a safek, because I don't know for sure whether Reuben or Shimon is his father. So therefore Rabbi Yehuda is saying he's potter. Only if he did it, but vafachas. So they warned him, if you hit one or the other of these guys as your father, if you hit him, you're going to be chayiv misa, and he hits them both together, or both with one stick or whatever, then he'd be chayiv, says Rabbi Yehuda. Question is, Valtani Rabbi Yehuda, I'm a potter, b'vasachas. But we have another braisa that says that Rabbi Yehuda says he's potter even b'vasachas, even if he hit them both together. The answer is, Tre Tanoi, I'll live with Rabbi Yehuda. You're right. You have two Tanoim arguing within what Rabbi Yehuda says. One way of looking at it is if it was Bavasachas, there was only one Hasra, so therefore that's it, he's definitely Chayev, because no matter what, he hit the one who was his father. The other way of looking at it, we're going to see now, my time of demand to Potter, so okay, why does the one who says he's Potter say he's Potter? He did it Bavasachas, what's the problem with Hasra? The answer is Omer Abchanina, because Nema Bracha Lamata V'Nema Bracha Lamayla. We make a Gzeder Shava between, or not really a Gzeder Shava necessarily, but just a comparison between Bracha, meaning which is a euphemism for Klala, for Birkas Hashem, for blaspheming the Eivishter. And it says similar, Lamata, it says Lamata about a person down here on earth, meaning a parent. And it says bracha l'mayla, and it says similarly bracha about the that you're not allowed to curse the Eibishter who's up above. So mal mayla she'en b'shut first. Just like when it comes to cursing Hashem, it has to be she'en b'shut first, that there's nothing combined together with it. The definition of mevarech Hashem is that the person curses the Eibishter using another name of the Eibishter. Yaka Yosi as Yosi is the Gemara, is the example the Gemara gives in Sanhedrin. Not that you're cursing the Eibishter together lahavdil with some other power. So also the cursing, when it's talking about cursing a parent, it has to be that there's no other possible combination with it. So not they're warning him, if you curse Reuven or Shimon, you're going to be chayav misa. It has to be that they're able to definitively say Reuven or Shimon, not one or the other. That's as far as klala. As far as hitting, the itka shakal leklala. The pasuk makes a hekesh between hitting and cursing because you have the pasuk mentioned umakir of v'imim moisi umas, and then two pasukim later umakal of v'imim moisi umas. So there's a hekesh between them. So the same din that applies to cursing applies to hitting. Same idea. It has to be that we know definitively who the father is for him to be chayim. So that's the reason why. So we have then three different. So in summary, we have three different opinions. One is the Tanakhama who says that no matter what, even if it was one after the other, because Asurah Safik according to the Tanakhama is fine, so they can tell him, if you hit Reuven, you might be Chayav Misa, and if you hit Shimon, you might be Chayav Misa. So then it's good enough, even if he does one after the other. According to the first version of Rabbi Yehuda, it can only be Bavasachas, because it can't be Asurah Safik, it has to be Asurah Svadai. And the third way of looking at it is because of this business of Bracha L'mayla and Bracha L'mata, then even Bavasachas he wouldn't be Chayav. Then the Mishnah, that's what I'm saying, he wouldn't be chayv, he'd be potter. Then the Mishnah said, "Va'ola b'mishmarav kola," that this child, who we're not sure who his father is, which of these two pay him, but he can work in the mishmar of the one father, of the one possible father and the other one. So again, if they belong to two different mishmarav, then he gets to work in each one. But the Mishnah said they don't give him portions of the karbonis from either one, because each one can tell him, you actually belong to the other one. Question is, well, if he doesn't get any portion of the karbanos, then why is he going? Then why is he going up? Why is he going to serve? Why he's saying I want to do a mitzvah? I may belong to this mishmar. If this mishmar is mitzvah to work in the Beis Hamikdash this week, why should I be denied that? What do you mean? Why is he ola? Ella, no. The question is like this: ola loikatani, because if it just meant that he has the option to do it, then the expression should be Ola. Ola implies basically that Lachatchila he should be doing this. And even as the Gemara is going to say, El Ola Baal Kochai, that the word Ola implies that he has to work in both Mishmaras. Why? It should say, if it just meant that, it would be Ola. If he works in one or the other Mishmar, then they don't give him a portion. Ola implies Baal Kochai, that he has to.
How do you know it's Allah versus Ola?
Because the Mishnah says Ola. The Mishnah says Ola, the Mishmar is Ola. Which implies he has to work in the mishmar in both mishmaros. The way it would go would be something like this: im ola b'mishmaros shalzeh v'shalzeh ein echolet. Tosfos was asked the question that how does the word ola imply that? Maybe the word ola means that the other members of the mishmar have to include him among them. They're not allowed to tell him you don't belong to our mishmar, go away. They have to allow him to share in the avodah. Akasha. Anyway, Amar Abacha Bachanina, Amar Abaya, Amar Abasi, Amar Rabbi Yechanan. As a matter of fact, he does have to work there. Gam mishpacha, because you don't want the families, the two respective mishmaris, to have a pagam, to have a defect in them. You don't want people to say, you know what, supposedly you belong to this mishmar, but we didn't see you working in the mishmarish that week. You must be a apostle. And then it's sort of like the whole family now there's a certain taint on that, and that whole family that now there's a apostle among them. So because of that, yes, we make him work in both mishmaris in order to prevent the families themselves, the mishmaris themselves from That's what we're saying. Yecholim lekoyfei. It actually says the bnei mishmaris yecholim lekoyfei. The members of the two mishmaris can force him. V'loy malay. They can tell him ho v'omer malach hashatul mishmar. What?
They
I guess they have the option not to force him.
Otherwise,
maybe
people would say the whole family cannot go and.
No, they're not going to say the whole family is possible. But at least there's going to be that we know now that in this family there's somebody who's possible, and it's going to create problems with the yochsinah. Then we said v'im hoyu shneim b'mishmar chulu, that we said if the two potential fathers both belong to the same mishmar, then we said he does get one portion of the karbanos, because then no matter what, he belongs to that mishmar. He's entitled to portions from that week's karbanos. The question is, we learned especially in Shkalim, that there was more than just mishmaris. Each mishmar is divided into batei av. Each base av would serve a different day in the Hesemekdash. So maishna shnei mishmaris deloy. Why are we saying if the potential fathers are from two different mishmaris that he doesn't get a portion? To azal hamishmaro madchalei, va'azal hamishmaro madchalei. Where we're saying if he goes to mishmar to the mishmar of Yahayariv, they can tell him you belong to Yedaya, and if he goes to Yedaya, they tell him you really belong to Yahayariv. Well then, mishmar echanami. Even if it's two people from the same mishmar, azal high base of madchalei. No matter which base of he goes to, they can push him off, because each base of is supposed to work at the mishmar one day. Amar Papa, you're right. Hachikamar, what the Mishnah means, im hayushneim mishma echad uveis of echad. If these two kayanim were from the same mishma and the same base of noito chelik echad, then he gets one portion. Because then, no matter what, however you look at it, then he obviously gets a portion of that day's korbanos. And in particular, Rashi says he gets they'll get the skins of the oilos that are brought that day and so forth.
That's even though he's a suffix,
but we know that both fathers are from the same base of, so no matter what, from the same base of, so therefore no matter what.
Hadron
alach noitin
alad. Both base of belong to the same mishmar.
By definition, yeah. Each mishmar is divided into a bunch of batayot. Rashi over here says six, in various other mafarshim say seven. The machloek is whether there's a separate base of for Shabbos, or whether all of them work together in the mishmar on Shabbos. Yeah, we've talked about this before, yeah. Now we've been talking throughout the Masechta about Yibum. Now we finally come to the dinim of Chalitza. This parak is all about the detailed dinim of Chalitza.
Diagrams?
Not really, although I do have some pictures that Svi Handler gave me a while back of a Chalitza ceremony. What? Yeah, you can find. Yeah, there is a video on YouTube of a chalitza. Yeah.
Made up. I mean.
No, not made up. No, the pashas was a real one.
Yeah,
you can see, for example.
Mm-hmm.
No, of course, among Ashkenazim we do it. Among Sephardim, sometimes you do it, sometimes not, because they hold that you can do yibum. But you can see, for example, the guy standing over there. You can see with the straps wound around his feet.
What is it? Why?
We'll learn as we go in the Mishnah and as we go throughout the Perek why the shrew is constructed the way it is. And why? And we're going to learn. We see at the bottom, in the bottom picture, you see there's five dayanim. We're going to learn soon why you need five. No, it's not terribly clear, but yeah. All right, let's begin. Mishnah says mitzvah chalitza v'shloisha dayanim. The mitzvah of chalitza should be done in front of three dayanim. V'afilu shloshtin hedyotis. Even if the three of them are hedyotis. Now, what do we mean by hedyotis? One possibility is, so Rashi over here says it means they don't belong to the Sanhedrin, meaning they don't have smicha. But according to Rashi, it comes out that you have to know all the dinim. They're just called adyotis because they don't have smicha ish mepiyish. Tosfos discusses. No, right. Well, obviously, if they have smicha, that would be better. But we're saying that you're allowed to do it without. Tosfos discusses maybe it doesn't even need to that. They don't necessarily need to be baki in the dinim, because if they're not certain about the dinim, they can ask Rabbanim, did we do the right thing? But they have to be. When we say hedyotis, they do have to know how to read. They do have to know how to read and to read out loud the psukim that are part of the chalitza, because they have to read them off for the yavam and the yavama to say them. So the machalik is what hedyotis means in this section. Continues the Mishnah. Chalitza v'mino chalitza t'ksheira. If the yavama does the chalitza using a shoe, then the chalitza is kosher. A shoe. Now, what's the difference between a shoe versus the sandal? So a shoe is there were different kinds of footwear that they had in those days. A shoe, Rashi says, is similar to all kinds of shoes. It's made from soft leather, as opposed to a sandal, which we'll have in a minute, was made out of hard leather. And there's various other mafarshim that talk about different other possibilities, that a shoe is made from several pieces and a sandal was made from one piece.
We're
going to get to that. Yeah. So if she does it with a minnow, with a soft shoe, then chalitzas kosher, as long as it's made out of leather, then the chalitza is kosher. We'll learn in the Gemara tomorrow why it's better not to, but Anpilya chalitzas psula. On the other hand, if she does it with a sock, or anpilya actually means any kind of footwear made out of cloth. So it can be like a sock, or it can be like a slipper or whatever, then it would be possible. The sandal sheyesh le'akiv kosher. If she does it using a sandal which has a heel, kosher, and then it's kosher. Now, actually, Rashi defines over here the word okev does not mean the heel. Rashi defines the word okev by the word for a sole, meaning the bottom of the shoe. So,
okay.
So that's what I'm saying. There's different understandings of what exactly a sandal is. Does it mean something similar to sandals nowadays, where it's just a sole with straps, or is it something more shaped like a shoe, but it's made out of hard leather instead of soft leather? Or it's made out of one piece instead of a bunch of pieces? So Rashi says the sandal sheyesh le'okiv means that it has a sole. There are other mefarshim, in particular Tosfos Yom Tov, wants to say that no, what it means is sheyesh le'okiv means it only has a heel, but it does not have a sole. So we're saying it's kosher, meaning b'di'evet. But chiller, it has to have a sole and a heel.
The forefoot is on the ground?
So the sole of the foot is on the ground. Yeah, maybe the toes are on the ground also. But it has a heel, so it has a heel at least. The back of the foot.
On the heel.
Yeah. So therefore, it would be b'di'evet kosher. Whereas according to Rashi, what the Mishnah is not really saying b'di'evet, it's just the okev over here means a sole. But she'en my okev is possible, because if it does not have a sole, it would be actually completely possible. By the way, there's a vort from the Mizrach Magid on this, a vort, the Pnimi Sein Yanim. He says, chalitza, the word chalitza is related, among other things, to a word for like preparing yourself to go to war. Hecholtzu me'itchem, get yourselves ready to go to war. A minol, he says, a shoe represents the guf, and okev, the heel represents Yiras Shemayim. We know the famous sichas that talk about the idea that the akev is the most grubber part of the body, and it's the part that represents Mesudas Nefesh. So the Mesudas Magid puts that it represents Yiras Shemayim. As the pasuk says, Ekev Anova Yiras Hashem. So therefore, Al Pi Adrush, what the Mishnah is saying is, if a person is getting ready to daven, they say Choltu, he's preparing himself to daven, and he has his minol, his body is lacking an akev, is lacking Yiras Shemayim, then his tefillah is possible. Because you have to have Yiras Shemayim.
The
akiv represents Yiras Shemayim because same idea, because it's the lowest and coarsest part of the body, like it doesn't know anything, it just, you know, it acts based on what the brain tells it to do. So it's a Kabbalah cell, basically. It's a Kabbalah cell part of the body. A famous explanation of the Haya Akiv Tishmun, that even the heel should be listening to what Hashem says. Nah. Continues the Mishnah. I mean, how Kubo Lamata, from the lower leg and downward, chalitza kshera, that's a kosher chalitza. I mean, akubo lamayla chalitza psula, but if it's above the lower leg, meaning above the knee, then it's a chalitza psula. Now, what do we mean by that? Rashi says, we're talking about over here, that suppose the yavam's foot is amputated. So if it's amputated below the knee, then fine, you can still do chalitza on the lower part of the foot. You can still attach the shoe, you can still tie the shoe onto the remaining part of the lower leg, but not above the knee, because then it wouldn't be considered. Then it wouldn't be considered a nal. Then it wouldn't be considered a shoe.
Prosthetics.
Yes, no. So as long as if he has a prosthetic that goes above the knee, then it's possible. He can't do chalitza. Other meforshim explain that mina akubo lamaila and lamata is referring to how high up are the straps tied on the foot. If they're tied on the lower leg versus on the upper leg, and that is why in these pictures you see that the straps are not tied on his lower leg. But according to those in the Mefarshim, if any of them were to go above the knee, then it would be possible.
But who says there has to be straps?
We'll learn in the Gemara. We'll learn over the next few days in the Gemara. Next, chalitza b'sandal she'en shaloi, if she does chalitza with a sandal that does not belong to him, or a wooden sandal, over shall smol b'yamin, or a left shoe that was put on the right foot of the yavam, because it has to be on his right foot. We'll learn in the Gemara why. Later on in the parak, actually it's a machalikus. Chalitza kshera, then the chalitza is kosher, meaning b'di'evin. It's not the right way to do things, but you're yotze. When we say wood over here, by the way, the Gemara is going to discuss in the next couple of days, do we mean actually, can it just be wood, or we said before, it's leather? And we're going to end up saying it means wood, kosher. This, by the way, we're saying that if it's a sandal that's not his, we're saying chalitza kshera, that the evidence kosher. What they do nowadays in the Seder Chalitza in Shulchan Aruch, it's written that the chalitza shoe usually belongs to the beis din. Every beis din has a chalitza shoe. What they do is they makne it to the yavam, and that way it really is his. Chalitza begadol shu. What?
He buys it.
Yeah, they do a Kenyan. It doesn't have to be buying, but he does a Kenyan, Khalifin, or whatever. If she does chalitza using a shoe that's larger than his foot, but he's still able to walk in it, or too small for him, but it covers most of his foot, then it's kosher chalitza. Again, it should be exactly his size. And actually, nowadays, what they do is also for that reason. They give him the shoe, and they have him walk around in a little bit to make sure that it's his size. Yeah. So the Gemara starts off, what did the Mishnah start off by saying? It said the mitzvah chalitza is to have three dayanim, but you can have even three hedyotis. So ma'achad after the shloisha hedyotis, if you're allowed to have three hedyotis, whatever the definition of hedyotis was, dayanim lomali, then what did the Mishnah have to say dayanim in the first place? The answer is you're right. What it means is when we say hedyotis, they do have to know how to read off the psukim for the yavam to say and the yavama to say word by word after them. They have to know how to do that, like dayanim do. So according to Rashi, it means more than that. According to Rashi, it means they have to know all the dinim, and according to Tosfos, it means as long as they know how to read Hebrew, then it's good. Now, so the Mishnah had mentioned three, hedyotis, Taneina Lahad Taner Rabbanan. So we learn by inference from the Mishnah what it says explicitly in a Braisa, mitzvah chalitza b'shloisha shiyonin lahakris ke'en dayanim. The mitzvah chalitza is that you should have three people who know how to read off the psukim like dayanim do. In those days, they didn't have chumashim with the kodesh and whatnot. Yeah, you know,
Hebrew or Aramaic?
It's Hebrew. The psukim are Hebrew. Yeah. As a matter of fact, we're going to learn in the parak, the Gemara also discusses in Sota, this is one of those dinim where the psukim davka have to be said in the original language, in Lashon HaKodesh. We have different halachas in Torah. We know, for example, Shema, technically you're allowed to say in any language. Benching, you're allowed to say, most brachas, you're allowed to say in any language. On the other hand, the psukim of the Yavama, the have to be said the Lashon HaKodesh. Because the pasuk says kacha, thus, which means that thus and no other way. We'll learn about it later. Now, Rabbi Yehuda Omer b'chamisha. Rabbi Yehuda says you need five dayanim. In my time at the Tanakhama, where does the Tanakhama get three? The Tanya, we learn in a braisa. The pasuk says like this. The pasuk describes that if the yavam doesn't want to do yibum, the pasuk says va'olsi yibim to hashaira el askenim. The yavama goes up to the gate, which is where the bati dinim used to sit in those days, to the skenim. So skenim shnayim. The word skenim means two. The mirgam shnayim. The end based in shakul, and the general rule is you can never have a based in with an even number of dayanim because they might deadlock. So necessarily, you have to add one more. So therefore, you have three. That's the Tanakhama. Tosfos just points out, by the way, I mean, on the face of it, what's the problem based in Shokul? What are we talking about? There's going to be a machlokas over here. And the answer is yes. You could end up having a machlokas whether they did the chalitza properly. So yes, you need three dayanim in order to be able to debate it. Rabbi Yehuda, where does Rabbi Yehuda get from? He says, Ziknei Shnayim, Zkenim Shnayim, because besides for the Pasuk, Ba'olti Yivim Da'ashayra El Azkenim, the next Pasuk continues that the Koroloi Ziknei Iroi, the Zkenim of his city call him, and start the process. So you have another word, Ziknei. So Ziknei Shnayim, Zkenim Shnayim, so you have two and two, the ain't based in Shokol, and again, you can't have him based in with an even number of people. Mosifin Alein Oibachot, so you have to add another one, Harei Kanhei, so therefore you have five. Okay, the Tanakhama, hi, Ziknei, my Ovid, like, so what does the Tanakhama do with the word Ziknei? Right? The answer is, Mibarile, Lurabu, Yafi, Lashloisha, Hedyotis. The Tanakhama would say that from the word Ziknei, you learn the very fact that you can use Hedyotis. Why? Because the word Zkenim, unspecified, would mean plain old people. That in the Drosha, Zkenim means Zesha, Kana, Chachma, means Tamina, Chachamim. But really, in this case, the only reason why we know that Zkenim over here means Tamid Chachamim is because it says that they actually have to come to Hashaira, to the gate, which is where the Beis Din used to sit. So therefore, the Tanakhama would say, based on the word V'olti Yivim to Hashaira la Zkenim, you would think it means you need Smuchim. The fact that it adds the word Ziknei means it can be plain old people. And once it can be old people, it can be young people as well, anybody, as long as you even have Yotis.
Zkenim would mean
The word Zkenim by itself would mean old people. When it says Hashaira Ela Zkenim, it means the kind of Zkenim who sit in the gateway, which means the Sanhedrin, which means the local based it. But when it says Zikre, again, the Tanakhama says, that tells us that it means any kind of Zkenim. Rabbi Yehuda, Hedyotis Minalei, okay, where does Rabbi Yehuda learn that you can use Hedyotis? He says, Nafkelem Ela Enei. He says, you learn it from the Pasuk. He says, the pasuk continues that the v'nikshu yivim to elav la'enei hazkenim, that the yavama approaches the yavam in front of the eyes of the zkenim, and he learns from the word la'enei that it does not have to be people who have smicha. How does la'enei teach us anything about smicha? The amamar la'enei prat l'sumim, because the braita says that the word la'enei implies that they cannot be blind. And when we do itzrich la'enei l'mo'urti sumim, since you need that pasuk to tell us you can't have blind people, shmamina dafi la'adyotis. Automatically, that means that they don't have to have smicha. The isakhet of Sanhedrin, because if you needed people who have smicha, who are capable of sitting on a Sanhedrin, lomali l'mo'urti sumim, you wouldn't need a special pasuk to tell us you can't have blind people. Blind people anyway can't sit on the Sanhedrin. Midatani Rabbi Yosef nafka. We learn that from what Rabbi Yosef taught. Then a bright says, the Tani Rabbi Yosef. The shame should based in Minukim Betzedek, just as Bistin have to be clean as far as being just, they can't be corrupt. Kach based in Minukim Mikomum, so they have to be clean from all mumim. Shenema, as the pasuk says, Kulach Yafa Rayofi Umum Enbach. You, my beloved, which is the Eibush talking to the Jewish people, are completely beautiful, and there's no mum in you. So therefore we see from that the Sanhedrin, which represents the Jewish people, anyway can't have mumim. So automatically blind people can't sit on the Sanhedrin. So if the Pasuk has to mention La'ene, that the people who are sitting by Chalitza can't be blind, automatically that means they don't have to be members of the Sanhedrin. Okay, the Idach, what would the Tanakhama answer to that? Hahu La'ene my Ovid Leis, so fine, what does he do with the word La'ene? The answer is Hahu L'chidu Rava Udasa. The Tanakhama would hold that the word La'ene teaches us Rava thing. Amar Rava, later in the parak, Rava says, "Srichi dayonim lemechse ruka dechanafik mekuma diyavama." The dayonim actually have to see the saliva coming out of the yavama's mouth and landing on the ground in front of the yavam. There's three parts. I should have mentioned at the beginning of the parak. There's three parts of chalitza. There's the reading of the psukim. His part, her part, may and yavami lahakim, and his part loyavloshavasa lekafta. There's the chalitza where she actually unties the shoe and takes it off his foot. And there's the rakika where she spits and when she spits on the ground in front of him. And makes another declaration, Kachayas al-ish, and then everybody declares chalitza nol. That's chalitza. So as we go through the parak, we're going to be talking about these three different stages of it. But there is that part that the dayanim need to see that part. They need to see the spit. So we learn that from the word la'inim. Because it says in front of the eyes of the skenim, and she spits. Okay, the question.
Spitting comes from the ene.
No, not from the ene, but the pasuk says that v'nigshu yivim te elav la'ene askenim. It says she approaches him in front of the skenim. It says v'cholta na'ali me'aragli. She takes off the shoe. V'yoka b'fanav, and she spits in front of him. So since la'ene is earlier in the same pasuk, we learn from that that means they have to see the spitting. Okay, the Idach Nami, okay, back to Rav Yehuda, doesn't he need the word La'ene to teach us the din of Rava? So how can he use the word La'ene to teach us anything about Hadiotis? Gemara says, Enoch Nami, you're right, he can't use it for that purpose. The Ela Hadiotis Minole, so we're back to the question, where would Rav Yehuda get that you can use Hadiotis, given that he can't use the word Zikne, because the old Zikne means you need five rather than three, so where did he get Hadiotis? The answer is Nafkum be Yisrael. Yisrael called her. Because the pasuk says that the Yavama comes to the Beis Din and announces, Mayen Yavami Lahakum La'achiv Shem be Yisrael. My brother in law does not want to reestablish his brother's name among the Jewish people. So the word be Yisrael means any kind of Yisrael. The Idach, Hi Yisrael, my Ovid Lay, knew, okay, what does the Tanakhama do with the word Yisrael? The answer is the Tanakhama would say we use it to teach us of Shmuel by Yehuda's din, which is B'Yisrael means the Beis Din Shal Yisrael, but the Beis Din Shal Gerim. That is, the Chalitza has to be done in a Beis Din of born Jews, not in a Beis Din of Gerim.
Can be such a Gerim?
Well, if you have three or five people get together who are Gerim, or one of them is a Gerim or whatever, that would be a Beis Din Shal Gerim. We're saying, Rav Shmuel Bayehuda is saying, and by the way, later on, at the end of the Amma, the Gemara points out, Rav Shmuel Bayehuda himself was a Ger. So he learned a Braisa that said that it can't be a Beis Din of Gerim. The Idach, okay, so what is, fine, so what does Rav Yehuda answer to that? He says, B'Yisrael, Achrinuxid. Fine, but it says twice B'Yisrael in the Pesukim. Besides for the Yavama's announcement, Mayan Yavami Lachim Lachim, Shem B'Yisrael, a couple of Pesukim later it says, V'Nikosh Me B'Yisrael, Beis Chalutanah. You have another B'Yisrael. So one of them can teach us that it can be Hedyotis, and the other one teaches us that it can't be Gerim. V'idach, what would the Tanakhama answer to that? They would say the second Yisrael, you need four different dins. As we learn in a bright, the Omer of Yehuda, Pama at the end of the Perek, Pam Achas Sefin Yoshim Lefnei Rav Tarfin. One time we were sitting as Talmidim in front of Rav Tarfin. Ubo Yivam Alachoy, so Yivam Alchamas Du Chalitza. But Omer Lonu, and Rav Tarfin said, after the Chalitza, Anu Kulchem Chalutanal, all of you should call out Chalutanal. Because the Prophet says, Nichra Shmei B'Yisrael Beis Chalutanal, that his name should be called in Yisrael, the house of the Chalutanal, the one who's done Chalitza. So what does that mean? The Gemara explains it means that everybody there should actually call out Chalutanal. So we know nothing would be Israel. That all the Jews over there should say that.
That's the other one.
That's what Tanakhama would say that we use it. The Idach. So what would Rabbi Yehuda answer to that? Rabbi Nikra Nafka. He would say you don't learn that from the word be Israel. You learn that from the word Venikra. And the Gemara leaves it at that. Apparently the Gemara figures that according to the other opinion, that's good enough. Fine. Actually, Tosfos says the reason is because according to that way of looking at it, you need the word v'nikra and v'yisrael, because otherwise you would think that it means only the dayanim should call out chalutanal. V'nikra and v'yisrael together teach you that everybody there should. If you had just v'nikra, if you just had v'yisrael, okay. Yeah, then you'd think yes. So therefore, we've covered all that. We found why Rabbi Yehuda is saying five and the Chacham are saying three. Now the problem is, based on that logic, if you're saying that you're being marbed based on the extra words in the Pesukim, what about the Karu Shnayim? Why don't we go further? That when the Pesuk says they should call him, implies two Dayanim. The Dibru Shnayim, when it says they should speak to him, implies another two. Achinami Rabbi Yehuda, Harekan Tisha, Rabbanan Harekan Shiva. What would that mean then? That you'd have, besides for whatever we dash from Skenim or Ziknei, you'd wind up then, according to Rabbi Yehuda, you need nine people, and according to the Chacham, you need seven. So we know that's not so. It's five and three. So why, the same way as they're dashing with Skenim and Ziknei, why aren't they dashing with Koru and Vidibu? The answer is Ahumi Baila L'Chidatanya, because we need those words for a different level. We need those for a Braisa that teaches us. When the Pasuk says the Karu Loi, they should call him, meaning the Loi Shlocham. They can't send a Shliach to call him. They have to call him directly. Actually, the Aruch HaNer explains it a little differently. The fact is, he says, you don't find this Halacha in Shulchan Aruch, but they adapt that to call him. And in any case, actually, it seems from later in the Perek that the Yavam and the Yavama themselves come to Beis Din usually. He says the Karu Loi means right there in the Beis Din Shtibul, they have to call him over. Not necessarily by name, but they have to call him over to talk to him. They can't send over a shliach to tell him. And the Dibru Eilav, when it says that they should speak to him, Malamat Shmasilma Eitzahay Genesloy. It means, what are they speaking to him? They give him advice that's appropriate for him. For example, whether to do Yibum or Chalitza. It's a case-by-case thing. For example, Shema, who yelled at his Kena? For example, if he was young and she was an older woman, who is Zakin Vihi Yalder? The other way around, he was old, she's young. Then they give him advice. Malach etzel yalda, malach etzel skena. What do you need to? You're an old man. What do you need to be marrying a younger woman? You're an old. You're a younger man. What do you need to be marrying an older woman? Kloch etzel shechemaytzach. Better you should go marry somebody closer to your own age. Don't bring in arguments into your house. You know, a marriage like that, or a May December marriage, they call it in English, is a lot of times a little hard. So that's the deep way. So that's
December, meaning a young and an old.
Meaning a young and an old, yeah. Like one's in the May of their life and the other's in the December of their life. Yeah.
It
brings up like this, yeah. So that's what, so the Karu Eilav, the Dibru Eilav, we don't have that available to teach us extra Dayanim. It means those very same Dayanim, the three or the five respectively, have to call him and speak to him and give him appropriate advice, whether it's appropriate in this case to do Yivum or to do Chalitza. Okay. We find many times. Okay, because we find a lot of times that the Gemara Darshan is like that. The Pasuk didn't have to say Bekaru, for example. They didn't have to say Bekaru or Vidibru. They could have just said, you know, what's the Bekaru and the Dibru and the Vidibru for in the first place? What are they calling him for and what are they speaking to him? The Chalitza begins with when he says, Loi Chafas Yurkasta. So go right away to that. The Yavama comes and says, May in Yavami Lahakim Lahakim Shem Yisrael. He immediately says, Loi Chafas Yurkasta, and that's that. What's the Vidibru and what's the Bekaru? That's what the Gemara thought. That maybe it's coming to teach us extra Dayanim. And the answer is that no, after she comes and tells them he doesn't want to, then they have to figure out, Taka, is it a good idea to or not?
Right, so
yeah. So who is the halacha like? Do we need five or do you need three? Amar Rava, Amar Rav Nachman, halacha chalitza b'shloisha. The halacha is that you only need three for chalitza. Hoyov asasam lantana kabasei, because we have a Sam Mishnah, our Mishnah, that says three. We have a Braita that says, Rabbi Yehuda says five. Fine, we go according to the Mishnah. Amar Rav Rav Nachman, ichachi miyun nami. If so, then the same din should apply to miyun. You should only need three. It's nam, we learn also in a Sam Mishnah at the beginning of Sanhedrin, and also in the next parak. Hamiyun v'chalitza b'shloisha, that miyun and chalitza can be done in front of a base din of three. So you should say that miyun has to be done in front of three also. B'chitei mahochi nami. So okay, you might answer, yes, miyun has to be done in front of three. What's the problem? But no, v'chatanya, miyun v'shama omrim based in mumchin. V'shama says that for miyun you need a based in a mumchin, meaning smuchim. Meaning not only three, but you need smuchim, at that actual smichish and piyish. Or v'silom based in v'shalayu based in. Vitzilo says you can do it in Basin or not in Basin. Meaning not necessarily doesn't need smuchim. But Eila Ve'Eila Modim Shatzarach Shloisha, both the Shama and Vitzilo agree you need three. But that's not the only opinions. Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Loz, Rabbi Yossi, Machshirim Mishnayim. Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Loz, Rabbi Yossi, or Rabbi Loz, Machshirim, it says on the side here, hold that it's kosher with two. The halacha is in fact like that pair of Tanoim. You only need two for miyun. Technically, actually, you don't even really need two for miyun. You really only need one. But as a practical matter, you need eight for it. So therefore, you need two. So we see, even though a Stam Mishnah says miyun, you need three, but we're saying the halacha is like the Tanoim will say you need only two. So you see, just because there's a Stam Mishnah that says three, doesn't mean that that's the halacha. But why in our case? Just because there's a Stam Mishnah that says three, who says that's the halacha? Maybe the halacha is not going to be ordered, that you need five.
But in that case, the miyun is Tanaim, you say two.
So?
In our case.
And in our case, it's also Tanaim. In our case, Rabbi Yehuda is the one who's saying five. Yeah. He's the Tana. The answer is, fine, but the difference is, in the case of miyun, you only have one Stam Mishnah that says that you need three. So therefore, we can have, against one Stam Mishnah, we can have this Braisa that says, that mentions Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Yehuda, and Rabbi Loza, Rabbi Yossi, and we can pass him like that. Here we have two Stam Mishnahs. We have our Mishnah that says that Chalitza can be done with three, and we have that other Mishnah that says that miyun and Chalitza can be done by three. There you go, they have two Stam Mishnahs.
Two against one,
yeah. Okay, the question is also not to face something new. Fine, but in the case of miyun, you also have two Stam Mishnahs. It's not miyana isha chalitza b'fanav. We learned earlier in the Masechta, we have the case of a dayan. First, we have two different cases. We had a case of a dayan who was matir, a woman's neder, we have the case over there where there was a neder, a woman had made a neder that she's not going to have anah from her husband. We learned earlier in the Masechta, Daf Chafei. We had a case where the woman had made a neder, she's not going to have any benefit from her husband. And they went to a Rav. He wasn't able to find a way to be matir neder, so she had to divorce her husband. We said over there that this dayan is not allowed to marry her, because people will be suspicious that he couldn't find a reason to be matir in order that he can marry her. But then the Mishnah continued, if she did miyun or chalitza in front of him, then he is allowed to marry her, because miyun or chalitza is done in front of a beis din. Right. Okay. Nishul beis din, and there's no reason to assume that the whole beis din would have colluded on that. So we see, it says you need a beis din. Nishul beis din. So you have a Stam Mishnah also that says that miyun has to be done in front of a beis din, meaning which implies three people. You have two Stam Mishnahs that say three against one Braisa that says two Tanoim who say two, and yet the halacha is two. So just because there's Stam Mishnahs, it doesn't matter. Ella, so okay, let's continue. Hashem Treis Dami, Hashem Plasas Dami. Fine, so we're up to two versus three. In the case of miyun, we have two Stam Mishnahs. The one from Sanhedrin, which is also in the next parak, and the one from Uriu in the Masechta that mentioned miyun or Shechalsa. Chalitza, now we have three. Our Mishnah, that one from earlier in the Perek, and the one from the Sanhedrin. So in the case of Mion, you have only two, and here you have three. So it's stronger. Gemara says, come on already. Mechdi, Hostama, Vahostama. I mean, after all, they're all Stam Mishnahs. Mali Chad Stam, Mali Tre Stam, Mali Tre, Mali Plasa. What's the difference whether you have one, two, or three? If the whole point you're saying that you pass in according to a Stam Mishnah is because Rebbe wrote it as a Stam Mishnah in order to say that the halacha is like it. So who cares whether it's one, two, or three? Why should three be any stronger than one? Ela Amar Rav Nachman Yitzchak, you're right. Forget about this whole idea of counting Mishnayos one way or the other. No, the reason why the halacha is that chalitza has to be done only by three and not by five, Hoyol Stam B'Makom Machloikis, because we find a Stam Mishnah about it in the context of a Machloikis, where Rav Yehuda himself is disagreeing about other things, whether how many Dayanim you need, but implicitly he agrees about chalitza. Zitanan, we learn in a Mishnah in Sanhedrin, Smicha skenim ve'egla ruf b'shloisha. The smicha of skenim. The two explanations of what it means. One is that it means when they bring the parhel of davar shel tzibur, when they bring the korban that the Sanhedrin brings when they made a mistake in halacha, then you need three of the dayanim of the Sanhedrin to lean their hands on the korban. The other explanation, the Rambam's explanation, is smicha skenim means to give smicha to tamar chachamim. The smicha ish v'tiyish had to be done in the presence of three. Egla Rufa, not the breaking of the neck of the Egla Rufa, that's done with the local based in, but the measuring, the fact that the Torah says, first of all, you have to measure from the dead body to find where the nearest city is, that has to be done by three members of the national Sanhedrin. No, so we said there's two different meanings, Michal Skenim. One is it means for the Parahelim Davashal Tzibur, when they bring a korban if they made a mistake in Halacha.
Right.
And the other explanation, the Rambam explanation, is it means giving smicha to chachamim, doing smicha ish v'piyish. Yeah. Anyway, v'arifa says the eglaru for b'shloisha, divri Rabbi Yosi, Rabbi Yehuda b'chamisha, and Rabbi Yehuda there says that for each of those things you need five, which the Gemara explains there in Sanhedrin how he learns five for each of those things. But the Mishnah continues, chalitza v'miun and b'shloisha, chalitza and miun can be done with three, v'loy kapolig Rabbi Yehuda, and Rabbi Yehuda does not argue on that. Shmamina Hodebe Rabbi Yehuda, which goes to show that Rabbi Yehuda changed his mind. Shmamina, okay, so that proves it. So that's why the halacha is that chalitza only needs three. Because in the end, we don't have any other opinion.
But then he
changed his mind, right. Yeah. However, continues the Gemara, Amar Rava, first of all, Rava says, Tzrichi Dayani L'mikba Duchta. The Dayanim have to set up a specific place for the chalitza. Because it says the Yavama has to go up to the gate to this Kenim. To the gate, meaning implying that there's a specific place designated for the Chalitza. What? No, of course not. No, it can be anywhere. Chalitza can be anywhere in the world. But what do we mean by it has to be designated? So some of the posts can say it can mean right beforehand. Others say it should be done the night beforehand. In practice, in Shulchan Aruch, it says that that's what you should do. If there's going to be a Chalitza the next day, The Dayanim should come there the day before and declare, we're going to be doing a chalitza here tomorrow. And that way it makes clear to them.
That's the
hukpa. That's the hukpa, yeah. Abdi Ubda Bachamisha. Now Rapop, going back to the 3 versus 5 business, so Rapop and Ramona Bredu of Yeshua but they actually, when they did a chalitza, they required there to be 5 people there. Question is, command Rabbi Yehuda or Hadabe? Why? According to Rabbi Yehuda, you should need 5, but we just said Rabbi Yehuda changed his mind. So why should he need 5? The answer is the first sumo milsa. True, you don't technically need 5, but you should have 5 in order to make a pirsum, in order to publicize the matter. Now, why do you want to publicize it? It actually gives 2 reasons. Number one, you want people to know that she's a chalutza in order that she doesn't end up marrying a kohen, because we've learned many times in the Masechta that a kohen can't marry a chalutza. Right, Grusha, the difference is she gets a get. And in those times, the usual thing was a woman kept a get. Nowadays, they whip it up and they give her a receipt for it, but whatever. She has a written confirmation.
She cannot keep the get.
Usually what the Beis Din does is they take it back and whip it up. I think the reason for that is because you don't want afterwards anybody to find something that might be possible in it that will create problems. But whatever it is, anyway, the point is she has some kind of written documentation that she's a Grusha. A Chalutza doesn't necessarily. The truth is, the Rambam brings a halacha, and it's brought also in Shulchan Aruch, that they would sometimes write a get chalitza, which is a document from Beis Din testifying that she's a chalitza, but not necessarily. It's not a requirement, unlike with a get. But not necessarily will she have a document, so therefore you want people to know for sure that she's a chalitza. Second reason Rashi says is because, so 3 wouldn't be enough, 5 is better. 1 second, I'll tell you what the Aruch Shulchan says on it. Number 2, Rashi says the reason is you want people to know that now she's available, so now people should go and want to marry her. Now why 5? So the Aruch HaShulchan asks, usually we find you need 10 for Pirsum. Why is 5 here enough? And the answer, he has a very interesting answer. Because, practically speaking, if you have 5 Dayanim, you're going to have as follows. You have 5 Dayanim, you have 2 Edim, because Chalitza should be done in front of Edim. You don't have to necessarily, but it's a good idea too. So that's 7. You have the Yavam and the Yavama herself, that's 9. inevitably there are going to be people in the crowd there. There are going to be people in the Beis Din Shiva watching and saying Chavrut Sana, like we said before. So many there, you have 10. You have enough for a piercing. So there I guess you can have there I guess you can answer a question. Where is the case in halacha that we see that a woman counts toward the minyan? And she says she counts the Yavama, according to the Aruch Hashulchan's explanation, counts as one of the 10.
So the 3 of the Beis Din, the 2 of the Adim, that's
the, five. There's the 5 of the Beis Din, the 5 of the Beis Din, the 2 Adim is 7, the Yavama and the Yavama is 9, and whoever in the spectators makes at least 10. It's my time now. I guess I'll tell you though that the Gemara is going to continue tomorrow. That as we go through the Gemara, we'll see that of these five, since the whole idea is you only need 5 for piercing, then really only the Mefarshim talk about the issue. Do the other 2 have to have the same qualifications as the 3? We're saying the 3, according to the opinion of Tosfos, that the three have to be people. Not Tosfos, rather according to the opinion of Rashi. That the 3 have to be people who know the halachas, they just don't have smicha. What about the other 2? Is it good enough if they just know how to read the psukim, or do they have to have all the qualifications? We must focus on the subject. According to Tosfos, all of them just have to know how to read it anyway. But Rashi would say that the three have to be knowledgeable in the halachas. So, as a practical matter, because it's not going to be obvious, you can see here in the picture, you have 5 people sitting over here. It's not really obvious who are the 3 and who are the extra 2. So in practice, they try to make sure that all 5 should have the qualifications to be members of the Beis Din. Really, though, actually, since only the 3 are really active in the Beis Din and the other 2 are only for Pirsum, in Dayanish Shprach, they call those two the Shkuma Dayanim. They're the silent Dayanim. Their job is just to sit there and fill out the bench, not to actually do anything. No, Shuma doesn't mean stupid, it just means silent. No, Shuma just means silent. Yep.